Okay, maybe we can start. And as usual, I will talk a little bit about meditation first of all, and then we can try it into practice afterwards. And I asked one of the monks what I should talk about today, and he said I should talk about noodle meditation. Because he told me that he has been sitting in meditation and thinking about noodles for half an hour. Of course, the Buddha doesn't recommend noodle meditation. It's not one of the meditations found in the suttas. In fact, in one of the suttas, the Buddha talks about the kind of meditation that is recommended and the kind of meditation that is not recommended. It's actually not the Buddha, it's actually Venerable Ananda who talks about this. And there's a Brahmin comes to Venerable Ananda, says that the Buddha recommended all kinds of meditation. And Venerable Ananda replies, that is not correct. There are certain kinds of meditation the Buddha does not recommend. And those meditation he doesn't recommend are the ones where the mind is obsessed by the five hindrances, by these things that stop meditation from working. And Venerable Ananda says it's like a horse. When a horse is kind of standing there, it's always thinking, fodder, fodder. Yeah, and when you think fodder, fodder, that's like thinking noodles, noodles, then you are going to be obstructed in your meditation. And that is the wrong kind of meditation, because the five hindrances are obsessing the mind. So this is one of those things that we always come back to, how to overcome these hindrances. And very often the way to do that is to circumvent them by finding some joy in your meditation practice, by reflecting in the right way. And there's numerous ways of doing this, and all of these ways are really found in many different places in the suttas. The Buddha often makes long lists of these things. And today is the Magga Puja Day. And Magga Puja Day is a day when really we celebrate the Sangha. In other words, the noble ones, or either the Bhikkhu Sangha, the ordained Sangha, or the Sangha of noble ones, those people who have attained stages of awakening. And because of that, I think it might be useful just to reflect very briefly on how you can use the idea of the Sangha as a reflection to kind of give rise to a bit of, you know, joy and happiness on the path, and then hopefully at the same time overcome these hindrances that are always the biggest problem, so you don't have to waste time with noodles and you can go straight to the breath instead. Whatever it is. So how do you do that? And there's a number of ways of doing it. One way is just to remind yourself that the reason why we still have Buddhism after 2,500 years is in large part due to the Sangha. The Sangha are the people, especially the monastic community, looking after the suttas, looking after the word of the Buddha for 2,500 years, teaching it again and again, making it available in the world. So the reason why we have these liberating teachings now is because of that effort over 2,500 years. And if you reflect like that, it gives rise to a sense of gratitude to that Sangha because of the effort they have put in to ensure that we have this marvelous inheritance from the Buddha still available after such a long time. I don't know how many generations, 100 generations or something, pass from one generation to the next one, and with great care, because of a feeling of the incredible sanctity, if you like, or the incredible almost holiness of these teachings, their ability to give rise to happiness in the world, to contentment, to freedom from problems and suffering, and what a wonderful thing that is. But even more powerful, I think, than just the idea that the Sangha has kept these scriptures intact over such a long period of time, is the fact that the Sangha is an example to us of what the life well lived according to Buddhist principles, what it actually looks like. If you look at the way the Sangha is described in the suttas, the way we are supposed to reflect on the Sangha, it says always that the Sangha is suppatipanno, Ujju patipanno, Nyaya patipanno, Samichi patipanno. And these things mean that the Sangha is like well practiced, practiced in an upright or direct practice. They have a proper practice, and Nyaya is almost like a methodical practice. So the idea is that people who practice in this way, yeah, when you see them, you can actually see, it's like you see the Dhamma in action. The Dhamma is kind of shines out of people who are noble ones because they are practicing in the right way. Their whole life is about practicing in the right way. And it's very difficult to be able to gain proper inspiration and confidence in the Dhamma unless you are also able sometimes to see people who are practicing in this way, who are consistently living up to the very often demanding nature of Buddhist ethics and Buddhist practice, which often is very demanding in terms of how you change your thinking and all of these kind of things. When you see that, it opens up your eyes to a different possibility, an alternative way of living, living in less suffering, more happiness, more contentment, than is possible for the vast majority of people. And that is something to be incredibly grateful for, because if you just read the Buddhist text, or you just hear talks about Buddhism, often it can be a bit dry. You don't really see the result of these teachings by just listening to things or reading things. But when you see it with your own eyes, it makes it come alive. The possibility becomes real. And I don't know if you feel that you have met people like that, but this is what has really driven me in my monastic life, this ability to see people of that kind of caliber. And it's one of the reasons why I came to Australia in the first place, is precisely because of that, because I thought those qualities were actually available here in this right here in Perth with the Buddha Society of WA. What a wonderful thing that is, what a blessing it is to have these things available in the local community like that. And when you think like that, when you bring up that thought, you feel a sense of gratitude. You feel a sense that your life is blessed with something incredibly powerful and amazing that is so hard to find in this world. And when you feel that sense of gratitude, that sense of being in the presence of something so powerful, then you may find that a bit of happiness, a bit of joy, a bit of gladness arises inside of you. And that is then what enables you to overcome those hindrances, those problems. Your mind becomes straight. It is no longer crooked by these defilements that stop you from making the meditation working. That happiness is a spiritual happiness. It goes against all the defilements of the mind. And for that reason, it is very powerful and very useful. So that is just a suggestion for you, because today is the Magga Puja. And I will try to see if I can incorporate some of these reflections in the meditation practice. But now, let us try it out in practice. Okay, so as always, before you really do any kind of reflections or anything like that, or before you go to the meditation object, always take plenty of time at the beginning just to relax and ease yourself into the meditation, making sure that you are comfortable. This path really only works when the body fades away. You don't want the body to get in the way, so be comfortable. Be at ease and give yourself time to allow the past and the world around you to fade away and to bring the mind into the present moment. And again, just give yourself plenty of time. The idea here is just to rest and to allow things to be. No control is required. It's almost as if you are just resting after all the activity you otherwise would do. So patience is really all that this is about, as if you are just waiting in the present, allowing for things to fade away. And as you are just gently relaxing and allowing things to be here, just very gently guide your mind to the right perceptions, as if you're just nudging the mind very gently here. Make sure you take notice of the peace that is surrounding you and the delight in that peace, and compare it to the ordinary busyness of life, and feel how liberating it is just to be peaceful, just to sit down, and just to do absolutely nothing at all. And if you need a bit more energy or joy in your meditation, to raise the kind of level of the mindfulness a little bit, and try to use one of these techniques mentioned by the Buddha. And if you wish, you can try to visualize somebody in your mind's eye, someone who has inspired you through their remarkable qualities, someone who is a living example of the Dhamma in practice. And if you can bring this to the mind's eye and feel a sense of gratitude and thankfulness towards such a person, if you can make this work, it will empower the meditation so beautifully. And then when you come out of that, you carry on, you can go on to the breath, and then the meditation is so much more easy and just goes by itself. And now we're coming close to the end of the meditation. And before we come to the very end, just take a couple of moments just to take stock of what's happened over the last 45 minutes or so. Try to understand how the process works, what it is that gives rise to peace and quiet, and what the problems and obstacles are. Okay, is there any questions or comments from the audience? Anyone here want to say anything? Nobody wants to say anything? Okay, that's usually the case at this point, which is good. So let's have a quick look at questions from outside of the center. And this is a question from California. When meditating and non-meditating, I feel a very refreshing coolness and so very light. Can you explain in detail what is happening here? When meditating and non-meditating, are you saying that you feel the same thing whether you meditate or not? You feel a very refreshing coolness and so very light. Can you explain what is happening? Well, in meditation, usually as you calm down, and you kind of let go of the body and you go inward, then very often you feel cool because you lose that feeling of the body to some extent. And especially on a hot day, it's quite hot here in Perth today, when you kind of go into the mind, the coolness kind of returns because the body is letting go of. And again, the lightness is a very similar kind of thing because the body is very heavy, it's a very heavy thing. And the more you let go of the body and you allow it to disappear from your perception, from the eye of the mind, very often you feel very light. And sometimes people can have the experience of floating in the air, as if you're floating. And you're not really floating, it's just that because you lose perception or feeling of the body, it feels as if you're so light, you can kind of become like a tuft of cotton, and you kind of take off at any time, and there's nothing that gravity doesn't really have a hold on you anymore as it normally does. So it's this change of perception that happens as you're letting go of the body and as you're kind of going inwards into the mind. So usually it's a very good sign. The fact that you're feeling light and refreshed in this way is a very positive thing. It feels very good. It's a positive feeling. And if it feels good, then normally you know that you're heading in the right direction in meditation. It's only when you're feeling bad about it, you're feeling upset or you're feeling deluded or you're feeling confused or whatever it is, that is usually a bad sign. But any positive experience you have, any spiritual positive experience is always a positive thing as far as meditation is concerned. So you can take that as a sign that you're heading in the right direction. So so just keep on going like that and you're probably going to make even more progress in the future. Okay, anyone else? No one else? Okay, this is pay respect to the Buddha Dhamma Sangha.